Hello, this is Christian Okoye, former Kansas City Chiefs. You are listening to Grilling Truth.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Grilling Truth NFL Legends Show. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. I want to welcome in our guest today, former New York Giant linebacker Carl Banks. How you doing, Carl?
Doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great to have you on. Let's just start off from the start. I knew you grew up in Flint, Michigan. You want to tell us a little bit about your time growing up in Flint and, I mean, maybe who some of the people you looked up to were when you were growing up football-wise?
Well, you know, I grew up in Flint, and it was quite a you know, a hometown experience. I had a normal life, you know, but you had football at an early age, basketball at an early age, track at an early age. So you had to do just about everything. We didn't, we weren't sports specific, and we kind of just found our niche as we got a little older. But there were really no time off, you know, in terms of if you played sports, they found something for you to do in every sport. So it was a lot of fun growing up. I started playing football at age, I think, 10 years old, and, you know, fell in love with that. But basketball was really my first love, and thought I would be a basketball player until I met Magic Johnson at a basketball camp and realized that football would be my sport. So I went on to Michigan State. But it's, you know, growing up, you had guys like Rick Leach from the area, Brad Van Pelt from the area, Rodney Feaster. There are a lot of great guys that were from the Flint area and in such a small town, but we were highly productive in terms of good people and good athletes. And, you know, went to Michigan State and had a good career, even though we didn't win a lot of games, and ended up being the third player drafted for the Giants in 1984.
Yeah, and talk about Michigan State a little bit. I know you were there with Frank Muddy Waters first 3 years. Program wasn't in real good shape. But then George Perlis came in. And, I mean, I don't think I've ever talked to a player that had as many legendary coaches. Perlis would have had been the first one. You want to talk a little bit about the influence he had on your career?
Well, he definitely, George definitely had a plan. And you know, he was tough when he first came in because he had to get the program turned around, and he took the program's best player, one of the best players. It was me, and he kind of, you know, wanted to make an example to show that he could coach and be tough on his best player, and everybody else would fall in line. And I was, you know, I'd come through a high school system where, you know, tough coaching wasn't a problem to me, so I rose to the occasion. And you know, he started to get the program on track. But one of the things that I thank him for most is he brought Jack Ham and the legendary Hall of Fame linebacker Jack Ham in the springtime, and he spent about a week or two with me to kind of help me learn how to play linebacker at a higher level, and I think that forever changed the way I played the game.
All right, now you talked about the NFL draft, third pick. What was draft day like for you back then? It's a lot different than it is now.
Draft day for me was very uneventful. I didn't get invited to any of the major all-star games or to the combine until I had to, you know, I had to prove myself at the blue-gray game. And once I did that, I got invited to the combine and to a lot of the other all-star games. And so I did that. I kind of felt that I was as good as anybody coming out. But, you know, you pick up a magazine pre-draft or pre-season, my name was never in it. And I think the most I ever made was an honorable mention as best linebackers in the country. And so when the draft came, I sat in my coach's office. And when the Giants picked number 3, which I had no idea I would be picked that high, it was Bill Parcells on the phone and said he didn't draft me to sit me on the bench. So I was delighted, even though the Giants had 4 all-pro linebackers. It was going to be a new challenge for me.
All right, so talk about that first training camp. You show up, you got Lawrence Taylor, you got Harry Carson, and Phil Sims, of course, Coach Parcells. What was it like that first camp?
Well, the first camp, my first day there, I introduced myself to both Lawrence Taylor and Harry Carson. And Harry Carson looked at me and said, "So what are you going to do? What the hell are you going to do to get on the football field?" So right then I knew that the standard was pretty high. And when I got to my first practice and watched Lawrence Taylor practice, he practiced faster and harder than any game I had ever played in. So you had to really hit the ground running there and know that the expectations were pretty high.
All right. So when did you first know that you belonged with those guys? I mean, 'cause you had to have some doubt coming in.
I never doubted myself. I felt I belonged from the day I walked in. I just had to prove it, and got the opportunity to do so, and I was a big contributor to the team. But it wasn't easy, you know, winning over veteran players there, because they had gotten rid of two good players in Brian Kelly and Brad Van Pelt. So I had to, you know, every day was a challenge, but I felt I belonged.
Okay, and what was your relationship like with Coach Parcells? Because that 84 season was huge, because his job had been in jeopardy at the end of 83, and in 84 he turns the team around, gets you guys to the playoffs. But what was your relationship like with him, player to coach?
I think as good as you can have from a player-coach standpoint. Again, you know, I was no stranger to tough coaching, so it was tough, but he was fair, and I embraced it. But, you know, he was tough. He made camp miserable for me at times, but, you know, he could take it as much as he gave it out, and I wasn't backing down. So we had a great relationship to this day. We still have a great relationship. So I benefited greatly from his style of coaching.
All right, so 84-85, Giants have very good seasons, make the playoffs. I think you lost to the Niners in 84, the Bears in 85. 1986 season comes. What was it that made that team so special, and when did you guys know that was a special team?
Well, we knew we were a special team the year before. So my rookie year, 1984, we made the playoffs as a wild card. And each year, it seemed like our goal was to go further because we felt better about ourselves. But in 85, you know, we found ourselves against the Bears, but we felt we matched up as well as anybody against them, and we thought we were as good. Obviously, they won that game, but that offseason, the minute that game was over with and guys were getting dressed to get back on the bus to the airport, to a man, everybody said that we would be in the Super Bowl next year because we felt we were that good and we had something to prove.
Yeah, and you look at it, the city of New York, I don't think the Giants had played in basically the NFL championship game since 1963. What was the atmosphere around the city during 1986 like for you?
Oh, it was just electric. The city completely embraced, the tri-state completely embraced the Giants, and it was just fueled energy for us. And then you had the New York Mets that were also contending for a World Series. So it was just a wonderful time to be a New York sports fan.
Yeah, and it had to be very satisfying in the playoffs. I think you guys' first playoff victory, you shut down the 49ers. You shut down the Redskins. I mean, that was one of the great teams defensively in history, I think. You want to run us through that little playoff run and dominating the Niners and Redskins?
Well, I think when you look at the 49ers and they're, you know, they were constantly in the playoffs and contending for a Super Bowl. And it was, you know, at that time, it was three teams. It was the 49ers and Redskins, and then we were always in the mix. But, you know, if you had to knock off the 49ers, you knew you were getting there, because they were kind of the team that you love to hate. They were the rival that didn't exist in your division. They were a different style of football, but they were very tough. So when we got them, we, you know, we wanted to make them play our style of football, which we end up doing. And then the next game was the championship game, and you know, no one thought that we could beat the same team three times in a year in the same season. And we felt very confident that we'd beat up on the Washington Redskins, which we did, and we were off to Pasadena.
Yeah, and you talk about Pasadena, Super Bowl 21. As I just wrote an article about the greatest defensive performance in Super Bowl history. I think you had the greatest performance of any linebacker in Super Bowl history. What was it, 14 tackles, 10 solo? You want to talk to us a little bit about that game?
Well, that was kind of a – that was one of those deals where you had the great John Elway and Dan Reeves, and, you know, they were – a different kind of football team. Offensively, they gave you a lot of different looks. We felt that we could, if we could make the game a physical game and play it on our terms, we could. But we had to prepare for a lot of different things that, that they did. And even on our offensive side of the ball, what they did with their defensive fronts were a little different. But from a defensive standpoint, they kind of got out on us a little bit. And we went in at halftime. We had made a big play before the half, a goal line stand, but we went in at halftime knowing that we were going to win the football game. And, you know, we didn't even get a big speech from Bill Parcells. He basically just said a few words, said, we've been down before, let's make the adjustments and come out and win the game.
Yeah,
and
I think that goal line stand, I think the goal line stand is what won the game for you guys right there.
Yeah, I think the goal line stand really, you know, kind of brought us into the space that we needed to be in that game. And we always felt like if a team got that far down the field on us, we were getting more angry, and we were pretty pissed off. So we weren't going to let them score. And I think each one of our linebackers made a play during that series. And I think I had to big key third down stop. Chasing the ball down from behind. So it was a big game, but that was one that I really prepared for. And it was just like, if you could have the perfect game, that was it for me as a defensive player, because I was in the zone. I don't think there's anything they could have run that would have been successful.
Yeah, I think the thing that stood out to me most about rewatching that game the other day before we did this interview was when John Madden made the statement that Carl Banks is the best player on this field today.
Well, I felt that way. I really did. I just wanted to be as good as, you know, when you have the perfect game, or you want to have your best game in your career, you want it to be in the biggest game of the year, and that's where it was for me. You got the Super Bowl, why not? You know, I prepared for it, and I just felt like I was going to have, you know, the game of my life.
Yeah, and then you guys are a great team, but you get to 1987, you get the strike. Things kind of fell apart there. You want to talk to us a little bit about the player strike and the replacement players in 1987?
Well, I think that probably – the strike hurt our opportunity to kind of create a bit of a dynasty and get a little back-to-back thing going, because the replacement players were not of the caliber of other teams' replacement players. We just basically, our management, they basically made the decision that they were just going to throw players out there and the strike would be over soon. But it ended up costing, you know, an opportunity to really build on something that...
Yeah, wasn't your strike team 0-3? Was it 0-3 or 1-2?
Yeah. And it was an opportunity to build on something that we had just finished, but that's the delicate balance of the NFL. And other teams decided that they wanted to try to win some football games, and the Giants did not. They didn't put enough talent out there anyway.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to fast forward a little bit, go to 1990, one of my favorite games, because I don't like the 49ers as much as anybody, because I'm a Bengals fan, and that was the only two chances we'll ever have to do anything, And it was taken by the Niners in the last few seconds. So 1990 NFC Championship game, I think one of the greatest defensive football games I've ever seen. It was a 15-12 game, but it was an exciting 15-12 game. You want to talk a little bit about that and going out to San Francisco and beating the Niners?
Well, we obviously had to win a few games to get to that championship game because the 1990 season was a yeah-but season. You know, we never got the benefit of being as good as we were in 1990, especially locally. You know, all you do is pick up the newspaper and read, yeah, they won, but. We had a lot of injuries that year, but we were a resilient team, and we did everything that we needed to do to win the game, and that meant we had good complementary chemistry, offense, defense, special teams. So we knew what we were. We knew how we had to win. We knew that we could count on different facets of our team if needed and if they were called upon. And by the time we got to the 49ers, before we got through the week, Bill Parcells stood up in front of the team and said that I think he brought a suitcase into the meeting room and said he's packing for 2 weeks. So tell your family that you're going to be gone for 2 weeks if you plan on going to the Super Bowl. So that's exactly was our mentality. We were going to go out there and win the game, and we packed for 2 weeks and went from San Francisco straight to the Super Bowl, to Tampa. And that game we knew was going to be a tough game. And we played the 49ers. They're just like a division rival to us. But we couldn't play a game much closer than we did, and it was the field goal kicker that did it for us.
Yeah, Matt Barr.
Yeah.
All right, so you go to Super Bowl 25. A lot different than 21. 21, you guys were the favorite, probably by a touchdown. You go to 25, and it's the opposite. You got a Bills team that scored, I think, 38 and 50 points in the playoff games before then. What was you guys' game plan to stop that offense or to at least slow it down?
Well, when we first saw the game and against the Raiders, and they were basically a track meet, and you know, our coaching staff, in particular Bill Belichick, did a lot of homework on the Buffalo Bills. But he kind of shocked us when he opened up our meeting and said that we have to let Thurman Thomas get 100 yards rushing. And that's something, that's a sense of a pride for our team. We never want to have any running back rush for 100 yards. But the reality was the Buffalo Bills had gotten away from their running game. They were a screen pass is was their running game by like the last six or eight games of the year. And they had one play, which was a draw, but everything else was screen passes and just passes. So we kind of understood once he explained it to us because they're running, they're not passing. But he devised a defense that would pretty much punish receivers and not emphasize the pass rush as much. So we had two defensive linemen basically rushing the passer, and we put everybody else in coverage. And every time they ran a crossing route, we were banging them, and they were good. But by the time they realized what we were doing, it was a bit late because Thurman Thomas probably could have had 150 yards because we didn't have a defense on the field to stop him. But we got a good break in terms of their kicker not having the distance and accuracy. But when you think of the last drive that they had, our punter, Sean Landetta, is probably the unsung hero because of the punt that he had. If they had ball in better field position, they probably would have had a better chance at kicking that field goal. But because we had such a good punt and their starting field position was where it was, we were able to keep them out far enough so that they couldn't get that final game-winning field goal.
So what are your memories on running on the field for that final field goal attempt? I think you were on the field then, weren't you?
Yeah, I was on the field. You know, it was one of those games, I'll be honest with you, that it was so hard fought by both teams. If that field goal had gone through, you would have to tip your hat to the team, to the Buffalo Bills, because they fought their hearts out just like we did. And it was one of those games that it was like a heavyweight fight where every guy is punching and punching and punching until the bell rang. And, you know, whoever the winner was, they deserved it. But if you lost, you tip your hat because, boy, it was a hard-fought game.
Yeah, and once again, you had an outstanding game in Super Bowl 25 also. It seemed to me like your best games were on the biggest stage at all times.
Well, that's who you want them. And, you know, look at the playoff run we had both years. I wanted to make sure I made a contribution. I mean, you're counted on in our defense. If you have opportunities to make plays, you got to make plays. And that was my role, and I relished it.
All right. You played for Bill Belichick. We didn't really bring it up yet, but you want to tell us thoughts on Belichick?
He'll go down as the greatest coach in NFL history. I got a chance to play for him the last 2 years in Cleveland, where he was just really getting the program turned around, and a lot of people called him a failure. But when you look at how teams turn, it's probably a 3 or 4 year proposition once you get the right players in place and get the program headed in the right direction. But they never really gave him a chance. But, you know, we had a record-setting defense the second to the last year he was there. And that following, we made the playoffs and we beat the Patriots. And the next year, the owner announced a move, and you know that the coach wasn't going to be retained. But Bill Belichick, you know early on that he's a players type coach in terms of making sure he minimizes the exposure of your players, always putting your players in the context of team in the best positions to succeed. A great evaluator of talent, his own and the opponent. And you can see by his level of success that it's working out. His philosophy is working out tremendously well in New England.
Yeah, and the thing that drives me nuts is I always make Packer fans mad. I get all kind of hate emails and stuff when I say that Lombardi wasn't as great. But Belichick has to switch probably 15, 20 players every year to keep it going, and he's done that for almost two decades.
Yeah, I think that's been the key. And then, you know, when you have Lombardi, he could build his team and keep it as long as he wanted to. But, nevertheless, Vince Lombardi's the king until Bill Belichick retires. And so, but, you know, he's had a quarterback who's been pretty good. And it helps when he plays at a high level and holds his teammates accountable as well.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's scary is what if Art Modell doesn't fire him? He goes to Baltimore with him, and he gets that defense with Ray Lewis in them.
Yeah, they probably have the same run that he's having in New England because, boy, you know, that team in Baltimore was so good with Ray Lewis and company. But I'm sure he's not looking back. I think the only people who are kind of missed out on it with the Cleveland Browns because they never accepted Bill Belichick and, you know, they never really gave him a chance no matter how good of a job he was doing and getting the program in the right direction. But, you know, circumstances are what they are and, you know, probably if he stayed in Cleveland, he wouldn't have Tom Brady and he wouldn't have the opportunities that he had. So it worked out well for him. It worked out well for Baltimore and, you know, the folks in Cleveland are still waiting for their opportunity.
Nothing really works out for the Cleveland Browns, Carl.
Well, yeah. you kind of hope. As a guy who spent a few years there, I root for that town. It's their sports fans are as good as they come.
And you were there for the last game then, weren't you, in 95?
Yep.
That had to be a surreal experience. I think you guys beat the Bengals like 25-10 or 26-10.
Yeah, I beat the Bengals 26-10, and every player went out and shook hands with the fans in the dog pound just to, you know, say thank you.
All right, so since you've retired from football, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing? I know you've got a clothing line, G3, you want to talk about a little bit?
Yeah, well, I'm the analyst for the Giants with the play-by-play man Bob Papa, the best in the business. And I started an apparel company while I was still playing football, and it's become, you know, pretty much my full-time, but I'm not doing my broadcasting, my full-time passion. And it's become one of the top sports apparel companies in all sports. It's G3 Sports by Carl Banks. We have the starter label. I'm sure you remember the starter jackets. I was able to bring those back, and it's doing really well. But we are the leaders in a lot of categories. In men's apparel, women's apparel, we're the leader. And swimwear, we do a lot of team sports from college to every major professional sports, including NASCAR and hockey.
Okay, and I'm sure you got a website. You want to give the listeners a website where they can find the information on it?
Yeah, informationstarter.com, g3apparel.com, and you can find information. And if you're looking for products for Christmas or for the holidays or for birthdays or whatever occasion, you can go to homeshoppingnetwork.com, and that's football fan shop, and you'll get a lot of our products. Or fanatics.com also has a great deal of our products.
Yeah, I remember the starter stuff real good, Carl. I'm like 48 years old, so I was right in the middle of that.
Yeah, it's back.
You couldn't watch a music video on MTV when they used to play music videos that didn't have a starter jacket involved in it or a hat.
Yeah, well, the new generation of millennials are gravitating towards the brand again as well.
Yeah, well, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about the New York Giants. How far can this team go? The defense, especially the corners, looked really good last weekend.
Well, they've got a pretty good chemistry going on defense. They've got a front end. Their front four is pretty good. No, they're damn good. I'll take that back. Defensive backfield is good. Linebackers are good. And they're connected. How far can they go? It's hard to say. I think you have to see where the offense ends up. Right now they're competing for a playoff spot. So if they get into the playoffs, that means they're doing a few more things right. And if they're getting their offense on track, it could be fun to watch. Right now,
I think the offense on track just comes down to whether the offensive line can start to play better.
Well, that would certainly help. That's where it all starts, to be honest with you, the run game as well as protecting the quarterback. And the quarterback is right now limited to what he can do based on the protection he gets. And if they can do something to give him more protection, you'll see a little more from him. But they have number 13 on the roster, Odell Beckham Jr., so you're one play away at all times if you can keep a game close. So they don't want to be dependent on that, but they've got other players that they got to get involved in the offense. And, you know, we'll see if they make some adjustments to help their offensive line and to give the quarterback more time to throw the football.
So in your opinion, are the Dallas Cowboys the best team in the NFC?
Yeah, you know, their record says so, but they've lost twice to the Giants, and if the Giants get their opportunity to get into the playoffs, then I guess they can decide ultimately who's the best team in the NFC if they meet in a NFC championship game. But, you know, as of now, the Dallas Cowboys are in the playoffs, and the Giants are competing to get in.
But and we know Eli Manning scares everybody when he gets in a playoff situation, especially New England and Dallas.
Well, he can get hot, so we'll see what happens.
All right, Carl, thanks for calling in. Everybody check out starter.com and was it g3.com?
Yeah, or hsn.com or fanatics.com. You'll find all our products. So if you just any one of those, search G3 Sports, and you'll see all our products or Starter.
All right. Hey, Carl, good luck with the business. Hope your Giants make a deep run in the playoffs for you, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, and we'll see what happens.
All right. Thanks a lot, Carl.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that was Carl Banks, former great New York Giant linebacker. I want to remind you, you can check out our other Legends interviews we've done recently, Jerry Kramer, Tom Flores, Roger Craig. You can check them all out at gruelingtruth.net. You can follow us on Twitter, at gruelingtruth. You can catch all of our shows on iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, Google Music, pretty much anywhere you find podcast, you'll find the Grueling Truth. Check out our main sponsor, Gridiron Mo, at www.gridironmo.com. So, for Carl Banks, I am Mike Goodpasture. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends